and Justice Miller Berman is also back with the court. So I think we've got a full bench here. Is Mr. Lancaster?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may approach, and good morning to you.
Good morning. If I could reserve 4 minutes for the court. I'm Todd Lancaster from the Nebraska Commission on Public Advocacy. I represent Mr. Jose Carlos Olivera Cochino. Representing the trial law with Mr. Horatio Wheelock, who's at counsel table. I don't want to spend a lot of time on the facts of this case, but I think I want to spend some time just to get the names of the players right, because there's some convoluted names that I'll let you understand what I'm talking about when I say a name. This case is a homicide case, started out as a death penalty case, involving the Hispanic family, Vanderlei, his wife Jacqueline, and their child Christopher. They moved from Florida to Nebraska. When they were in Florida, they had met Jose Carlos Olivera Cochino. He worked for Mr. Chispanic. They moved to Nebraska to renovate a school for their church. While they were in Nebraska, Mr. Chispanic also had his own construction business, and Mr. Olivera worked with him and lived at the house with the family. At some point, Mr. Chispanic asked Jose Carlos Olivera if he had friends that wanted to come up to work as well. He contacted Gonzalez Goncalves Santos, who's a co-defendant, and Mr. Baptista, childhood friends. They came up from Brazil. He assisted paying for them to do so. They were essentially kidnapped in Mexico at the border, and he paid more money to get them released. They came to Nebraska, worked for Mr. Chispanic. Sometime before the family went missing, Mr. Olivera started a relationship with Ricardo Mendez Gonzalez, also known as Angel. This was a romantic relationship that he had with him, and would stay at his house at times. The Chispanic family went missing. Last contact with them was around December 17th. After that date, checks were deposited on Mr. Olivera's account at the bank. Mr. Baptista's, Mr. Goncalves Santos, and also a person named Eduardo Barbosa. These checks were from the business account of the Chispanics, the business they had. Family members and members of the church came from Brazil to Omaha, concerned about the family. They went to the church. Mr. Olivera let them in, assisted police to search the building. Eventually, the police come to do a search warrant. Mr. Olivera is in the building. He'd been living there, but had moved out and was going back checking the mail at times. And he was living at another residence on Park Avenue that Mr. Baptista and Mr. Goncalves Santos were living at. He's there, and the police are going to do a search warrant. An officer is told to detain anybody at the residence. They detain him, take him down to the police station. He and the other three are eventually arrested. He interviews with law enforcement. He asks to talk to them, and then he asks for a lawyer. The local county attorney doesn't contact the public defender's office. He contacts an ex-employee who does defense work and says, you can represent Mr. Olivera because the police want to talk to him. You'll be appointed later on. This attorney is never then appointed. They are not charged in state court, but federal court they are charged on immigration matters.
Now, you say they.
Mr. Olivera, Mr. Baptista, Mr. Goncalves Santos, and Angel.
Okay.
The federal cases are essentially eventually dismissed. They're charged in state court, the four, with theft charges, basically, for the checks and ATM purchases that are purchases and withdrawals that were made. Eventually, Angel, Mr. Gonzalez and Mr. Baptista have their state cases dismissed and get deported. There's a hold, a detainer hold on the other two as well. Mr. Goncalves Santos is charged with three counts of first-degree murder, essentially based on telephone calls he made to his wife in Brazil, where he allegedly confessed to killing the family and disposing of them in the Missouri River.
No, excuse me, we're getting the names. That's not the defendant.
Not the defendant.
Okay.
Mr. Goncalves Santos is tried. A week into his trial, he stops the trial and says, I want to confess about what happened. the family were there. And Mr. Olivieri told him that he choked Jacqueline and the child. He did take the police to the school. They didn't know that's where they didn't think that's where the murders had happened. Shows they were, when there's blood under a radiator, matches Mr. Chabanik's blood. He eventually takes them to the Missouri River, points where the bodies were disposed of. He's interviewed the next day and makes a second statement, which is contradictory to his first one, where he says he was directed by Mr. Oliveria and Mr. Baptista to lay in wait for Mr. Chabanik when he came home. They beat him with bats and an iron pipe until he was dead. They then tied up Jacqueline, the wife, made her sign some checks, and then Mr. Baptista and Mr. Gonzalo Santos took Jacqueline and little Christopher to a stairwell where they tied a rope to the railing to them on a landing and pushed them off, and they basically died from being hung. Then they disposed of the bodies in the Missouri River. As a result of his making these statements, his charges are reduced to one count of second-degree murder with a recommendation of 20 years. Mr. Oliveri, the appellant in this case, is charged with three counts of first-degree murder, and the state sought the death penalty. One of the issues at trial that we filed a motion to dismiss was based on the fact that the two important witnesses, Angel and Mr. Baptista, had been deported. They were not available to testify at trial. According to Goncalves Santos, Baptista was at the crime scene, participated in the crime, would have been an important witness to have there to either agree or disagree, deny his presence there, but he was deported. Along with Angel, who possibly could have provided an alibi defense for Mr. Oliveria, that he was with Mr. Oliveria on the night of December 17th, at a different residence with him, so he couldn't participate in the homicide.
They were deported before Gonzalo Santos made his statement.
They were deported before his trial and before he made those statements. Now, obviously, the law enforcement interviewed both of these people, Angel and Mr. Baptista, but they didn't really go into any detail about interviewing them. Do you know what happened to the family? Do you know who participated in this? Do you know what happened? What are your thoughts of anything like this? They made no effort, really, particularly with Mr. Baptista, to get information if he knew about what would have happened to this family. So obviously they were unavailable at trial. There were no statements, no interviews that could have assisted us to provide a defense. Now, the motion was denied at the district court level to dismiss based on the loss of their testimony. One of the reasons was that the court said that there was no showing by the appellant that the state acted in bad faith. They acted in good faith. They didn't change immigration deportation procedures. They didn't have these people deported and didn't preserve any testimony knowing that they had exculpatory evidence. Now, the appellee in this case argues that that should be the standard, that a defendant should show the state acted in bad faith. If you go back to the case United States versus Venezuela Bernal, there was a case dealing with having somebody deported that might be an immaterial witness. That case doesn't say a defendant has to prove the state acted in bad faith. That's not the good faith exception that case stands for. In that case,
what have the federal circuit courts said?
Many of the circuit courts say the defendant has to prove that the state acted in bad faith. That's not what the U.S. Supreme Court said, though. What the U.S. Supreme Court said is there's a duty of the state to enforce, or the government to enforce immigration procedure, but they should also, upon doing that, make a good faith determination whether or not the people they're deporting have evidence that could be favorable to a defendant. They made no effort in this case, not make good faith effort, no effort to determine if these people they deported could have been favorable to the defendant.
Your argument is the federal circuits have all got it wrong?
My argument is the federal circuits have all got it wrong, and the U.S. Supreme Court, their standing that the circuits base their decision on is what should be followed. That the state has a duty
to make a good faith effort before they deport people to determine if they've got evidence favorable to the defendant before they deport him back to where they can't be found.
Did the U.S. Supreme Court decision on which you rely involve a federal prosecution or a state prosecution?
It was a federal prosecution involving immigration matters.
Well, isn't there a difference when we have dual sovereigns? The state of Nebraska doesn't have any control over what the federal government does in the immigration arena.
They certainly can ask the federal government to not deport these people.
If
the state can also...
If they had no knowledge, and you would certainly agree they had no knowledge, to ask the federal government at that point to do anything with respect to those people, why should the state of Nebraska and its citizens be, in effect, sanctioned because the federal authorities didn't ask these witnesses questions?
The state, you're correct, the state has no control over the immigration policies and the actions of the federal government and immigrant people. They certainly were able to keep Mr. Oliveira available. They charged him with the financial transaction charges. Those were still pending. They dismissed those charges on the other two. The state certainly could have filed material witness warrants on the other two after they dismissed those charges to keep them available for trial in Mr. Gonzalez Santos' case and also then in Mr. Oliveira's case.
So is your argument that the state was acting in bad faith here?
It's hard to say if they're acting in bad faith. I can only assume that they were, and my argument would be they were, because they knew these were going to be important witnesses. But what I'm also saying is that's not the standard that we should impose, that the defendant
Assuming it is the standard, you're arguing today that the state acted in bad faith?
I would say the state acted in bad faith. They had a means of keeping these two people available for trial, did nothing to keep them here, whether it be talking to the federal immigration authorities, filing a material witness warrant.
What is a material witness warrant?
Material witness warrant is essentially a warrant, statutory provision saying these witnesses are material to the case. We don't believe they're going to be available for trial, so we want them to be either held or detained with some kind of provision such as bond or whatever, so they remain available for trial when trial comes up. And that's a statutory provision that Nebraska has. And that's a way they could have kept these witnesses here. Even if they had a detainer, a federal detainer.
Did the state know they were material witnesses?
There's no way they couldn't have, particularly Mr. Baptista. The three of them, Mr. Oliveira, Mr. Baptista, and Mr. Gonçalves Santos, close friends, Mr. Oliveira brought them up from Brazil, helped them come up here. Mr. Baptista and Mr. Gonçalves Santos were living together at the Park Avenue address. That was one of the buildings they were fixing up for Mr. Hispanic. They were always together. The three of those were the three amigos, basically. There was plenty of evidence that they were almost always together, except, for example, when Mr. Oliveira was somewhere else with Angel.
What triggered the deportation of
the fact that the state dismissed the state charges. They no longer had anything holding them in, no state charges holding them in the jail. That immigration detainers, the Douglas County Jail, turned them over to the immigration people and they were deported.
Does the record show why the state dismissed those charges?
Obliquely, it does. In those cases, the statute of limitations was coming up on, or the speedy trial time was coming up on those charges. However, for example, in Mr. Oliveira's case, he had asked for a continuance of his case, and I believe the other two had done the same thing. So they were opening to continuances. It wasn't as if the cases were going to be immediately dismissed on speedy trial. So they could have kept them there with those cases pending, and I think the record shows that. I know we had put into the record the deportation proceeding papers and that sort of thing. But again, if the standard is that the defense has to show bad faith on the part of the state could not have known that these two people were going to be material witnesses. That they couldn't have thought, oh, these people won't have any information that's going to be helpful either to us or the defense. Let's let him get deported. There's nothing in the record, obviously, with the state saying, these people are going to be important to the defendant, so we're going to deport them. It's hard to prove that, but clearly the state had to know that these people were important and should have made some effort to make them and keep them available for trial, particularly in a case where a defendant's charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder and the state's seeking a death sentence. Again, I think the standard should be that the state should make good faith efforts to determine if they have evidence that can be valuable to the defendant before they make any determinations to let them be deported or have them turned over to immigration. One of the other issues that did come up at trial, in this case, Mr. Gonçalves Santos testified against Mr. Oliveira. He made numerous different statements at trial that were inconsistent with his original statement to the police, his second statement to the police. The defense did go out with their investigator to the location of the school to where Mr. Gonçalves Santos said, this is where we hung Jacqueline Christopher and how we did it. And we tried to recreate that by tying ropes to the railing where he said tied the railing to the person on the landing to determine if somebody was pushed, that they would be suspended and be able to be hung. The evidence that we made our offer proof was somebody wouldn't be suspended. If you had that rope from the railing as tight as you could at the landing, that distance was longer than it was from the rope on the railing to the bottom of the stair.
What's our standard of review on that issue?
I think the standard review in that is abuse of discretion. The trial court said that the experiment essentially was not the same. Our brief states some cases that essentially say, if this is to rebut evidence of another witness, that substantially similar requirement should be relaxed. In this case, it was substantially similar, even with the relaxed standard. And we believe the court erred by not allowing us to present that evidence, which would have discounted and discredited Mr. Gonçalves Santos' explanation about how these two people were killed, because they couldn't have been hung the way he said, because they would not have been suspended. They would have been able to stand on that stair and not being choked or have their arteries blocked. So we believe that was an error as well.
If that evidence had been admitted, the reenactment evidence had been admitted, how would this have unfolded in your view? That your investigators would have been sworn in as witnesses to show how this reenactment occurred?
And that's what we attempted to do. We had our investigator testify about and testify as to pictures taken of the reenactment. We have made an offer of proof about what they would have testified to, essentially that somebody could not have been suspended and strangled and hung the way Mr. Gonçalves Santos said they would have been. So, and I think that's important because there was lots of information at trial that discredited everything Gonçalves Santos was saying, including, you know, the statements he made to his wife were that he had acted on his own. The statements that he made to another witness after his trial, a man named Cockthorn, on the day he was getting sentenced, Gonçalves Santos, was that I acted alone. Oliveira wasn't there. He's a fool. He had nothing to do with this. And that's the motion for a new trial, but Gonçalves Santos' testimony was inconsistent to a fault. Changed his story, denied things. For example, they had a plea agreement. His credibility was the state's evidence.
And all of those issues were presented to the jury?
All the issues except the experiment. The testimony of Cockthorn was after the trial. That's why we asked for a new trial, believing this is newly discovered evidence. That didn't go to the jury. His inconsistent statements and that sort of stuff all went to the jury.
What do you think is your strongest argument here?
I think the strongest argument is the fact that the witnesses, Mr. Baptista and Angel, were deported. Mr. Baptista could have come in and testified, I wasn't there like he's saying. The only other witness, he's the only state's witness, essentially. In Venezuela, Bernal, they related to another case, that's a confidential informant case, where the state didn't turn over their witness. That's in our brief. That's Roverio versus United States. And in that case, the Supreme Court said, look, this witness is so important. He's the only person other there at this transaction where the crime happened. By not turning that witness over and making him available, you substantially damaged the defense's ability to put on a defense. And in that case, they reversed because of that. I think that's very analogous to what has happened here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Faust, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel, my name is Stacey Faust, Assistant Attorney General representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska. I'm going to start off with the deportation issue. And the majority of courts that have addressed this have held the defendants have the burden to prove that the government acted in bad faith when it deported the witnesses, in addition to making a plausible showing that the deported witnesses would have been material and favorable to his defense, such that there is a reasonable likelihood that the testimony could have affected the judgment. The bad faith requirement is based off the U.S. Supreme Court case of Valenzuela Bernal and the U.S. Supreme Court case of Arizona versus Youngblood, which cited to Valenzuela as an example of having a bad faith requirement. Based further on U.S. Supreme Court authority, namely California versus Trombetta and U.S. versus Marion, courts, including the Federal District Court of Nebraska, have said that to prove bad faith, a defendant must show, one, that the government departed from normal deportation procedures, and two, it deported the witnesses to gain an unfair tactical advantage over the defendant at trial.
Those are addressed to the conduct of the government.
Correct.
I.e. the federal government.
Correct. I mean,
So this is a sort of a second level, right? What
almost
would the state have to have done to prevent the federal government from deporting?
Almost as if I was going with the assumption that you'd almost treat the state as an extension of the federal government, and that's why these factors, you would have to show that the state somehow also violated those two factors. Somehow it had information from the federal government or some sort on that issue, on those issues, but he can't show bad faith because there's no evidence that they were deported to gain an unfair tactical advantage or that they were in violation of normal deportation procedures, mainly to not gain an unfair tactical advantage because they were deported 6 months to a year before they even knew they could charge Oliveira with the murders. They didn't know they could charge Oliveira or Batista until Goncalves slipped at his own trial and provided them with the physical evidence that they needed to go after the other two with the murders.
I'm still back on the legal framework, and how is it that we get from bad faith of the government to imputing that to bad faith of the state if we do?
Well, I don't think you should. I don't think you should. I'm just taking the argument even in the most favorable light to the defendant, I don't think you can show those two factors here were violated.
But you're not conceding that the state is an agent of the federal government.
No, but here he is arguing that they should have known, they should have made sure, they should have basically been in contact with the federal government on this. And I'm saying, okay, even if I give you that benefit of the doubt, you still can't prove the state violated anything.
What does the record tell us, if anything, about the dismissals of Baptiste and Angel?
It shows nothing other than the dates they were dismissed. That's all the record shows. It
doesn't show us the reasons why.
No, it'd be complete speculation. I could stand up here and give you all the reasons why I think, namely ethical obligations and speedy trial. You can't hold somebody.
But that's not in the record.
Nope.
Thank you.
I also don't think that he's made a plausible showing that they are material and favorable. According to Oliveira, Angel was his supposed alibi. It wasn't just Angel, according to Oliveira. It was Barrientos and Pastrano, who his investigator also found Barrientos, and Barrientos couldn't confirm Oliveira's alibi. So they couldn't call him, and Batista wasn't going to testify unless it was against Oliveira, like Goncalves. Unless he's getting a plea agreement to get up there and testify, he's not saying anything because it's going to implicate himself, and he's going to take the fifth. And also a review of these cases, re-reviewing from today, the deportation cases seem to be concerned with the immediacy of deportation. Valenzuela Bernal talks about prompt deportation and how the defendant didn't get a chance to interview, an opportunity to interview the deported witnesses. The Nebraska Beef case talks about how the deportations occurred just 1 to 2 days after INS agents located 200 illegal aliens. There is no prompt deportation in this case. Batista and Angel were both picked up and placed on ICE holds in February 2010. Angel wasn't deported until October 2010. Batista wasn't deported until early 2011. They're all being held together at Douglas County Corrections. He had every opportunity to go and interview them and to get information because he knows he's a suspect at this time. In March 2010, he talks despite his attorney's advice. He knows that they think he's a suspect in the murders. He could have gone and talked to them, and that's what those cases are concerned about, is they weren't even given the opportunity, and he was. 6 months to a year, he was given that opportunity, and he didn't take it.
Could he have gotten a statement under oath?
Sure.
While these folks are on ICE hold?
Absolutely. Go get their deposition, yes. I'd like to talk next about the experimental evidence. The state submits that Olivera is really trying to recreate the hangings, and therefore, obviously, he can't do the essential factor, though, which was that Jacqueline was pushed down the stairway where she hit her head and rolled. And if you can't get your bearings in time, because it only takes 10 seconds for that rope to be around your neck to render you unconscious. And therefore, within 10 seconds, if she can't get her bearings fast enough and stand up because she's rendered unconscious, she's going to asphyxiate. That's what the pathologist talked about. That's what he testified about. This was essential to a fair and honest experiment. And because it's essential, it renders it inadmissible. It doesn't go to weight. It goes to admissibility.
Is that something that should have taken some type of expert testimony where there would have been a Daubert hearing of some kind ahead of time to go over it?
I wish, but I think the case law allows for and basically someone who has enough knowledge to be able to testify about such a thing. It doesn't. It's not a Daubert analysis as case law stands. And quite frankly, I don't believe that's the only essential factor that was missing. We don't know Jacqueline's height and weight. We don't know the exact kind of rope. We don't know the exact tightness of the rope. We don't know the exact location where it was tied. Gonçalves' testimony was just not specific enough on any of this, nor I don't know why it would be. There's just too many unknowns and too many unknowns to say that the district court abused its discretion, which is the standard of review, when it did not permit this evidence to be introduced to the jury.
What about this lessened standard of review argument?
The relaxed substantial similarity
test.
He's trying to use that to say that it was really only for the purposes of rebuttal or impeachment, because in order for it to come in, it has to be nearly identical if it's going to be a recreation. And what I'm saying is he was trying to recreate it, I believe, even though he says he was offering it for the purposes of rebuttal or impeachment, because I don't know what the purpose was for trying unsuccessfully to copy and call based testimony if you weren't trying to recreate the events in your favor. But even if the purpose was for impeachment and rebuttal so that the substantial similarity requirement is relaxed, that similarity requirement is only going to be relaxed as to the non-essential factors, and essential is that Jacqueline was pushed down those stairs. You can't get this in through an experiment. If he wants to show that Goncalves' testimony it couldn't have happened the way it happened, then he needed to cross-examine him in a different way, get his evidence in a different way, not through experiment. I'd like to talk about the motion for new trial. I just wanted to add that Olivera or Thone never said that Goncalves said he acted alone. These are two individuals. This is, if I didn't already say motion for new trial, but Cacthone was a cellmate that was with Goncalves prior to his sentencing. And these are two individuals who English is not their first language. We know from other witnesses that Goncalves speaks little to no English at all. And he allegedly told Thon that Oliveira, quote, didn't do anything. He wasn't even there when they do all of the killing. And according to Goncalves' testimony, Oliveira wasn't. He was in the room with Jacqueline and Christopher, or just Christopher, when these killings took place. He never took part in any of them. And we can't forget the part of his testimony that Goncalves told him that, quote, man, he tried to put the thing in my mind. He wanted to put a problem in my mind. And that actually corroborates Goncalves' testimony that Oliveira convinced him to commit these murders. And frankly, it goes to his credibility, which, as we know, and as you know, that that's not grounds for a new trial. And I'd just like to comment on the handwriting expert testimony that every circuit court, including the Eighth, that has addressed handwriting expert opinion testimony has found it to be admissible. And I think once you review Charles Eggleston's experience and his testimony, that he showed that his testimony was reliable and that it was certainly relevant to this case. If there are no further questions, we ask the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
He is over.
There is no time for rebuttal. So we will go on to the last case of the morning, which is In Re Matter of Fecht versus Pierce Elevator, Inc. And let us, we've got folks who are going in and out on this case. Justice Miller Lerman is recused. Justice Wright is recused. And Judge Pirtle from the Court of Appeals will remain and be seated with the rest of the court. Justice Miller Lerman has now left the court, so good morning, Mr. Weber.
Yes.
You may proceed.
Rocky Weber from Crosby Gunzel, LLP here in Lincoln, Nebraska, representing the appellant Matthew Christensen. The group of appellees represented by Mr. Frazier and the appellant are going to split their 15 minutes at 7.5 minutes apiece. And of our 7.5 minutes, I would like to reserve a minute of that for rebuttal, if I could, please. At issue in Mr. Christensen's appeal is whether or not he is a depositor, owner, and storer of grain in the Pierce Elevator as of May 5, 2014, when the Nebraska Public Service Commission closed that facility. Earlier in 2013, Mr. Christensen had hauled to that elevator 38,627.5 bushel of corn and had held that there in open storage. The terms of open storage was he could hold it there until October 1st, at which point he would have to start paying storage on the